The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 222, Thursday, 10th of September, 2009.
The DigitalLifestyle.com.
Welcome to The Media Centre Show on the DigitalLifestyle.com. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, Mike Garson from Mission Remote joins me to talk about small form factor PCs and how maybe they could take over from extenders or replace large form factor HTPCs with nettops and these other PCs coming out. There is some people are using those in place of extenders, and it's one thing I'm looking at myself. So we're going to be talking about those and seeing how they affect how I use Media Center. I've got a catch-up of the news, email, and some details from the CD from Microsoft CD press release. So welcome to the show. It's great to have you along. First, I'm going to dive into the email, and this is from Sven asking about DVB-C with Windows 7. And I think they're probably the best way is for me to read out the email and then see if you can help. He says, "Hi Ian, today I write to you directly because no forum or blog has an answer to a problem that belongs to many European Windows 7 users. Let me describe the problem. To use Digital Cable Signals DVB-C with Windows 7 Media Center, I need a TV tuner that will decode clear QAM. Windows Media 7 recognizes mine Tekra H5 with BDA driver, but I have to configure the signal manually, which is no problem. The signal scan doesn't detect any channels, but they are found, and I can manually add them to match the EPG. After looking over the found channels, I find that many of them are missing. The scan starts and ends with a specific frequency, and it seems their frequencies are not matching with lots of European cable providers. Another problem is that the channel step in Europe is 6 MHz and in the US it's 8 MHz. So Windows 7 Media Center finds the channels that are in the frequency that matches the US virtual channels. To resolve this problem, it seems necessary to patch these values, start and end frequency stepping, and match the virtual channels. I don't know where to find these values. Are they in the new EPG database? And if so, how can it be manipulated? I found a thread of a Canadian who has an update with the DB MXF files to see HD content in Canada. Is that the solution? If you have any hints or any ideas, please let me know. Sven." Well, thanks for the email, Sven. I can see what you're saying. I'm surprised, really, that it doesn't work. It should really work out the box. DVB-C is supported in Media Center, and I'm sure it knows about the European formats. But maybe there is a workaround, and I'll throw it over to you listeners to see if you can come up with something. Email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Maybe it's similar to the problem in Canada, which we talked about in the past. Now an email from Wes. "Hi Ian, first I'd like to congratulate you on the great work on the Media Center show. I visit the site each day and look forward to every podcast. I was really hoping you could help with an ongoing issue and trying to get MKV files to stream to my Linksys extender. I use Media Browser for all my TV and movies and everything works fine, apart from playing MKV files to the Linksys. I use Transcode 360 to actually play the files on my Windows 7 RTM 64-bit setup. Unfortunately, the audio sync is out of alignment with the video, and this only happens on MKV files. I've tried to adjust the settings with the Transcode 360 tools, but it doesn't seem to work, and the program is no longer supporting these updates. I'm really keen to get this up and running to make my HTPC setup complete. I've tried new DivX text previews, but unfortunately this only works on specific H.264 files. Any help you offer would be great. I can see there are guides converting MKV to DVRMS files for the next step. I just wanted to see if I could avoid the conversion times. Regards, Wes." Thanks, Wes. Actually, I think your best bet is to convert them to DVMS files and follow the guides. I think Ben from Engadget HD and Andy Van Til has talked about using DVMS Toolbox, so I would go with that route. And this is probably one of the reasons why I'm looking at other solutions other than extenders, like the low-cost PCs, and also the Extrema sort of set-top box, which I'm going to be reviewing fairly shortly, which is actually, it's an embedded Linux based device. It's a 99 quid box with HDMI on it, network, wireless, or whatever, and it will be able to consume those MKV files from a home server or a MIDI center box and just play them straight through to the TV. So that is another way of doing it, but more on the extremer as when I come to review that. Anyway, if anybody's got any suggestions on MKV files, other than just convert them, let me know, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Right, let's take a look at a couple of items from last week, news items. For a complete list of news items, make sure you subscribe to the digitallifestyle.com RSS feeds, and you can follow me on Twitter. They all get posted up there as well. twitter.com/isdixon. Also, make sure you check out the other podcasts on the digitallifestyle.com. TDL Mobile is a great show talking about mobile phones and applications and platforms. Really enjoying that one. And also the Custom Integrator show and the other shows on the site. Right, so like I said, here's a couple of items from last week. First, I want to get solicit some feedback from you as part of a future podcast looking at alternatives to Windows Media Center. I want to get your feedback on the platforms available. Are there any Media Center applications you use, like Sage TV, Boxy, or one of the open source projects? I'd love to hear your thoughts on how well it works, its expandability, usability, and the Wi-Fi acceptance factor, and those kind of things. So you can email ian@thedigitallifestyle.com or leave a comment on the blog. It'll be interesting to hear how they stack up Windows Media Center for the future show. Bit of Zune news now. The Zune is out, I think, next week. I've got my Zune HD on order. But it looks like Microsoft have killed off all the other Zunes, the flash-based ones and the hard disk-based ones. So there won't be any other Zunes available apart from the HD models, which I think is a shame, because I think the 4 and the 8 ones are a nice little device that you can use to get people into the Zune family. But that's not going to happen anyway. So whether we'll see any more hardware Zune products shipping alongside the HD, I'm not sure. But I think we're just going to see more Zune services in the Xbox 360 and Windows Mobile and other places. And there's no shortage of remote control apps for the iPhone. Another new one is out. Media Center remote for the iPhone called N-Control. This works with Windows 7, Windows Vista, and Extended. It's a free app, and you can browse your pictures and record your TV shows and everything else and navigate Media Center. There's a server app, as most of them seem to have, which is free, and you can download that server app from N-Control. Link for that in the show notes, and the client app is available in the Apple App Store. Now, if any of you out there are interested in Media Center development, Media Center developer Oakley Byam is looking for developers to work on his Media Center projects. He's posted the details on his blog. And you can email his CV. Yeah. And if you're a Media Center developer and you're interested in doing that, you can email your CV to his oakley@byan.de. This is oakley@byan.de. Link in the show notes for all the details of what he's looking for, but it sounds interesting that he's got working on a big Media Center development and looking for more developers. If you're in the UK and you want to win a free TV tuner for Media Center, Microsoft UK promoted Media Center TV usage by looking for TV ambassadors from Windows. So they give you a tuner, and if you've got Vista Home Premium or Vista Ultimate, you can receive a free tuner worth £60 and become some kind of ambassador for that, some marketing thing. I tried signing up, but the final page failed, so I'm not sure whether I signed up or not. Well, link for that in the show notes. Now to the Microsoft Cydia announcement. I know there was a lot of anticipation as people were waiting to see what the Cydia announcement would be, and I think it's a little more low-key than some people are expecting. I think the primary thing for them for Microsoft was to show Windows 7 to the Cydia market. So there was nothing specifically. So they weren't going for any big bang news. They were more going to show off Media Center to that market. There was some new announcements. They announced Switch Digital Video support for cable card. So MediaCentre will support the Switch Video standard, which is good. They also announced that end users can now add digital cable tuners to Windows MediaCentre without the need for a special OEM box or hacks or anything else. So in the past, if you wanted to add a cable card tuner to your MediaCentre PC, it had to be an OEM box that was specifically made or licensed for a cable card. Now that has been removed, so anybody can do it. There is a minimum standard that the PC has to attain, and there's a downloadable tool to be able to check that. Some more details on what the requirements are when I get those later. The other thing they announced is copy freely flagged recordings. MediaCentre will respect that and not put DRM on it on a cable card recorded TV show. So if it's marked as copy freely, then MediaCentre will respect that and it'll make it so that you can then try and move that to other PCs or perhaps convert it for Zune or whatever. So anything that's still marked as copy protected won't work, but anyway, it's a step in the right direction, so it means you're a bit more flexible with what you can do with it, so it's good for home group, etc. And also they talked about there'll be an update for the firmware for existing cable card tuners. They also announced the ultimate install contest winner, Dustin Anderson from Vision Audio, and we'll try and get them on the show in the future like we did with last year's winners. So like I said, I think there'll be a few people that are disappointed about the lack of anything particularly exciting on there, but it was more about talking to the custom installers, showing Windows 7, the things it can do. I didn't really expect any huge like tuner announcements or anything like that. So, more details on that on the blog. I'm going to have all the press releases and everything else, but I just wanted to get the headlines to you on the show this week. So, like I said, look out for a couple of videos. There's a couple of things I should have on. I should have a video review of an unboxing of the Xtremer. Have a look at the link in that show notes. That does look an interesting device, and I just seen whether I can fit it to a recorded TV, and it does make a very cheap extender, so I'll keep working on that. The other thing I've got hold of as well is a hacked Apple TV box to see what I can do with that as well, so maybe look out for a video on that. So now it's time for the interview with Mike, and you can follow me on twitter.com/Dixon, email me ian@thisislife.com, and here's Mike. Mike Garson, welcome back to the MediaCentre Show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to be back. I really wanted to get you on your own to talk about a few things tonight.
I appreciate it. I hope people don't get tired of hearing my voice.
What I wanted to talk about really was something that's kind of crept up in the last few months. I think it started with netbooks, really, but it's the kind of the net top or the small form factor home theater PC that's creeping out. And I know you've been talking about them on Missing Remote. So just before we talk about that, just tell us about Missing Remote, because you've always been contributing there, but am I right in thinking now you've kind of taken over the whole thing now?
Yeah, so recently the former owner, Alan, who's still very much involved, he and John, who had really helped create Missing Remote, and they designed everything, did all the hard work, they handed off the reins, so I'm now the owner of Missing Remote and trying to manage it and run it and post everything that I can. So the main goal behind Missing Remote, what it's always been, is to just provide a broad overview on home theater electronics, specifically with PCs, that's out there. So that includes MediaCentre, Sage TV, Boxy, whatever's out there. So part of what I want to do is have it be the place that people can come for all sorts of news. And then we also have the forums there for people that need help. And then offering guides and reviews whenever possible and relevant to the topic. So looking to just continue on what Alan and John already started and have been doing a great job with. And it's fun. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And there's some good stuff on there as well. And you've always had the good guides and things like that. So it's great to see the site back full with content again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of still the legacy of what HTPC News was. You know, that was really in its heyday. It was a great place to go for all home theater PCs, news and posts and stuff. So trying to rebuild it and get it back to where that was. And I think we got a pretty good community. So I like it.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a good place to go. So looking at these small form factor PCs, can we kind of describe what I'm talking about here? What's the sort of the typical example of one of these devices?
Sure. So you have a mixture, right? You have the basically the Intel based, which the majority are based off of the X4500 chip, and then the NetTop ones are really coming off of the Ion based. And basically Ion is, for those that don't know, it's an Intel Atom processor tied together with a specific NVIDIA graphics processor. And the way both of these chips, the way both of them work so effectively for home theater PC clients is that they both enable hardware acceleration, which allows them to play high definition content smoothly, which, you know, previously just wasn't possible because, you know, without hardware acceleration, the CPU is taxed, and then, you know, that made everything else more difficult.
I think that's the thing, isn't it, that these are capable of doing the HD content, and that's what differs them from the nettops, which kind of netbooks in a desktop case.
Right. You take your average Acer or HP netbook, and I doubt you'll be able to play Blu-ray content, even if it is on the little screen. And that's the big difference, right? I mean, a lot of these small form factor PCs that are coming out specifically geared towards the home theater PC market, or just the consumer level, they are designed to be able to play the content. And yeah, while they might use the same CPU, the graphics engine behind it really makes a difference.
Yeah, do you think that this market for these small home entertainment PCs, as it kind of seems to be called, is going to replace the market for the traditional home theater PC, which is kind of your wide Silverstone case type, you know, big home theater units?
You know, it's a tough question. You know, my heart wants to say no. And I think for a certain group of enthusiasts, the answer will always be no, for the simple fact that while these are fantastic players and they can do good things, they can't do everything. I mean, I don't know about you, but the reason I initially got into home theater PCs 10 years ago was because I wanted it to do everything. I wanted to be able, if I wanted to play games on it, I wanted it to be able to do it. If I wanted to rip movies on it, not that I do that, but if I did, I wanted it to be able to do it. I wanted to, you know, be able to store my content. And while the entire home theater ecosystem has changed, the fact will always be that if you're looking to be able to do everything, there's no way these small form factor PCs are going to be able to do it. And to be fair, nor should they be designed to be like that. I mean, you're talking comparing a $500 device, $500 to $1,500 device, to a, you know, $2,000-$3,000, you know, entire media server.
And I suppose it's almost similar like to the thing that's happening with netbooks, where some people kind of expect these, you know, really cheap, low-cost netbooks to do the same thing as your high-end, high-end notebooks.
Right. That's going to be, and that's one of the things we're definitely trying to convey. Like, we had I just recently did a review on a NetTop home theater PC client, the AS Rock Ion 330. And that's one of the main things I was trying to convey, in addition to the specs, is just exactly what you can expect, both from the capabilities of the specifications inside the unit, as well as performance playback as well. I mean, for playback alone, they're fantastic. And you know, that's something that they just need to be marketed that way. And I think so far they are doing a good job. I don't think people that are investigating small form factors are really thinking of them as your central home theater PC.
Yeah. So typically then, where would somebody with a a media center system where they may have a big home theater PC, or they may have it more of a server-based role. So typically, where would you then place these units?
Basically, it would be a bedroom clients are really the best. You can apply it in the kitchen, a garage, or study. But when you think about the bedroom and the TVs in there, I mean, we've talked about noise from a home theater PC for years, and how important it is for your wife acceptance factor to make sure that box is quiet. You don't want to hear the loud fans humming. That's gotten less important as people are now using racks a lot more, hiding their gear in cabinets and such. But in the bedroom, very few people have, I mean, unless you're using distributed audio and video, you probably don't have a rack in your bedroom. So you're talking about, A, you're dealing with a bedroom of whatever size. It could be a 10 by 10 or it could be huge. And you're looking at having you want it to be minimal, right? Nobody wants a big chassis that makes lots of noise in your bedroom. It's not very appealing. It doesn't look good. And it stands out, right? Versus your home theater room, where, you know, you probably have a receiver, maybe an amplifier, processor, different things to make it all look like it fits in. In the bedroom, you really just want the TV to be the main center of attention. And that's what these small form factors allow us to do that we never could before.
Yeah. I suppose, like you said earlier, it's about media consumption rather than serving. So it's not going to be a machine that's serving extenders, or it's not going to be, I think, perhaps doing your TV recording. It's a consumption device.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's essentially filling the void of the limitations in extender devices.
And this is exactly what sort of my next point was going to be, is how does this fit with the extenders? Is this taking on the mantle of what kind of us enthusiasts wanted from extenders, and these are the new generation of extenders, or is this something different?
I think it's definitely going head to head. If I had to say it was going to compete directly, it's definitely competing with the extender market versus competing with your main media server market. There's some benefits there's definitely benefits to extender devices. A lot of them have no moving parts, no storage, which is great, again, when you're looking to save power. You know, they consume way less power. And they're more pretty reliable. You know, the disadvantage versus a small form factor PC is that they can't do as much either. You know, you can't pop a Blu-ray disc in an extender. I'm not familiar with any extender that have Blu-ray drives. I mean, the slight exception to that, which I'm sure the folks at Missing Remote will remind me of, is the Sage TV extender, which can play ripped Blu-ray movies. But you know, that's the exception to the rule. I'm saying the majority of them are definitely limited, and then again, you still have to rip it. You know, if you just bring a Blu-ray disc home from Blockbuster and you want to play it in your bedroom, you know, it's currently extremely difficult. You know, if you have the extender model, even if you have an extender that plays ripped Blu-rays, now you're talking about bringing the movie home. Now you have to take the time to rip it, which, you know, Blu-rays are very large, and then you can finally go in the bedroom to play it. You know, I know you're married, and I don't know if your wife would appreciate that.
No, I mean, it's not. Yeah, you're not gonna do it.
Yeah, you just wouldn't. You'd settle for something else, or settle for watching it in the living room, which, you know, is fine for some people. Some people can, you know, there is definitely an extender crowd that understands the limitations. Appreciates that, you know, they only draw like 10 watts of power. But then there's other people who would prefer, you know, just give me a smaller unit. The small form factor PCs are still extremely low power, and then they can do everything. And you know, it's just different people, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. And of course, these have the advantage of being able to use things like Hulu if you're in the States, or BBC iPlayer. I mean, I guess if you find out with BBC iPlayer, you can get it in. You can get the HD from BBC iPlayer, so it's an easy way of getting HD content streamed directly without, you know, any complication.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I mean, one of the big limiting factors in the media center extender platform, and it actually translates to all the extender platforms, is that because it is such a custom solution, you know, they'll come out, like the Roku is a great example, right? The Roku is a $99, you know, little client extender. I mean, it's essentially its own box, self-sufficient. But if you have a Roku, you're limited to whatever Roku can develop on that box, right? So if some new technology comes out, look, you know, they don't have Hulu, for example. So you need to wait for them to program. First, they got to make the deals, the contracts, to make it all worthwhile. You know, this week in particular, there was a big announcement with Roku over MLB, Major League Baseball, here in the U.S., and being able to stream 720p content of the games through your Roku, which, huge announcement, as well it should be. It's a great deal. It's a great win for Roku, and I think it makes the box all that much more appealing than it already was. But again, the fact is, if you had a small form factor PC, you could do that with a little keyboard and mouse whenever you wanted.
Yeah, you're not really relying on a third party to come up with a solution. Things just work, which is great. I mean, and you can still use the 10-foot interface where it's applicable as well.
Right.
One of the things that launched fairly recently was MSN Video in the UK, where they're streaming TV content, older TV content, and it's been great. You could get that directly through this, onto a small form factor PC. Although I think Martin Milmore has added it to Tuna Free MCE anyway, that works on extenders. But like you said before, it's there first.
Right. It's what I mean. The beauty about the internet technology that we have today is everything's coming out on the internet first and very quickly, and the small form factor PCs are essentially a PC. As sexy as the media center software that we use makes them, at the base, they're always just a computer. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have come over to my house and wanted to watch some YouTube clip or something else, and you know, I can within a minute bring up a browser and on the big screen with my surround sound setup play this, you know, some joke video that's on there. And that's the flexibility that a small form factor PC can give you, which an extender unfortunately cannot.
Yeah, but I suppose on the flip side, you've then got it's not got the simplicity of an extender. I mean, my Xbox 360, I have it set to go straight into Media Center, so you just switch it on at the front and then it's ready to go.
Absolutely. That's a great point you made, is that it is a computer. And I know you've done a ton of tech support, as I have, and computers bring support issues depending on what the people are doing with them. If they stay limited to strictly using the home theater PC, it makes life a lot easier. Extenders don't have any problems about viruses. I mean, occasionally they have crashes, but for the most part, they recover fairly gracefully. It's a box which can do X number of things, and it will do only those X number of things, but it will do them well and reliably. So it always comes down to a consumer's choice of what's more important, having the flexibility of an entire OS platform, knowing that it could crash. You know, you could be playing something and have Media Center freeze and you have to close it or restart the system, or you could go the extender platform and maybe not even be able to play that format. It's definitely a mixed bag, and the support and reliability is something to consider.
But I suppose what follows here is the same even if you're using extenders, your main media center system, if you keep it clean, tends to be, you know, very reliable, especially as you've gone through Vista and Windows 7. I find it, you know, keep it clean and it works very well.
Right, absolutely. I can't remember the last time my main media center crashed.
No, it is. If you look after them and don't fill them full of crap, then they work quite well.
Right, and that's where the expertise really comes in. You know, for people like yourself and myself, who, you know, we do this essentially for a living. You know, we know how to take care. We know how to maintain. You know, for an aunt or uncle or cousin who doesn't know anything about computers and really right now just wants Netflix and, you know, doesn't care about anything else, you know, I would probably recommend them get the Roku, just from a simplicity standpoint and from my own headaches. You know, those late night tech support phone calls are fun, but not so much. So yeah. I'd rather just get them a small box that'll do exactly what they want, and you know, they never have to worry.
Yeah, and that, I suppose what the downside of these devices, apart from the sort of the complexities that we talked already, is that there's things out of the box missing, like shared guide data and sort of live TV not necessarily working through the extended model. So do you think there's any sort of workarounds for that?
Well, it depends what your content is. You know, for it, here in the U.S., the main limitation on between using the extenders, I'm specifically talking about Windows Media Center, is the all cable card content is copy protected.
Yeah.
So there's rumors, as I think Ben mentioned, of that going away, essentially, or actually the content flag actually being appropriately flagged, meaning content that's supposed to be flagged, of course you won't be able to play it, but then the majority of content like free to air, like ABC shows and such, you will be able to play. And if you can get those on your server, which PowerPack 3 now enables you to instantly transfer your recorded TV to your server, you can play those on any PC in the house using Homegroup, which is fantastically easy. As for the content that is copy protected, that's a lot more difficult. But I think that the content providers are learning and having an option. For example, Comcast just announced last week that they're going to at some point be offering their premium subscribers, people that subscribe to HBO and Showtime, access to those shows via some sort of Comcast portal, right? We haven't seen it, at least I haven't personally seen it, but they did announce that that is coming, and that gives people an alternative, right? I mean, if you have the small form factor PC, then you have access to a web browser, and in turn you can go and download or just stream the show instantly, which is something that before there was no way. If you didn't get it off the air, off your cable box, there was no way to do it.
Yeah, I think something similar happened with Sky. I think if you've got a Sky account, there's a kind of Sky web portal, like you said, where you can then watch content through the website. So again, this is a good point where a PC solution works well, because it's a flash based player, and that would work quite nice on small form factor.
Absolutely.
But I think it's live TV is probably the key one. I'm not sure they're offering live TV. Oh, yeah, thinking about it. Yeah, they are. They were doing the cricket. So, yeah, so that would work in certain circumstances. And I think BBC are starting to do some live streams as well with their channels. So I suppose there are, like you said, there are ways around it.
Yeah, there's ways, but it all depends on what the user needs. If live TV is the most important way if it's the most important feature and they're using Media Center on their main home theater PC, then of course using a dedicated extender such as the Xbox 360 is just the more prudent way to go if they don't need all the extra features.
And I suppose things like the networked TV tuners are also something that could be looked at.
Yeah, the HD Home Run, that's a perfectly viable option for a setup like this, where you'd have multiple clients around your house trying to share the content. That would work great, and it would allow you to get all the free-to-air QAM recordings that are available to you, store them all on a server, and then you can play them when you want or stream live if a tuner is available.
Yeah, I suppose that's another way of doing it. And I suppose the other limitation as well is local storage. So what you mentioned before about Windows Home Server would certainly get around that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make, is that I think the home theater market in general is shifting away from storage in the box. Part of the reason small form factor PCs are taking off as fast as they are is because we've been trying to develop computers that run cool, quiet, very low wattage, because we understand these boxes are on all the time, especially if you're using these to record television. you know, very few people trust standby, so they have to be on all the time to be able to reliably record your shows. So part of that is having minimal storage available. You know, I look forward to the day when we can all run our OS off of a CD or off of the server, just, you know, and have no storage in the box and just record directly. You know, gigabit Ethernet's fast enough to keep things up, and the wireless is getting better, 802.11n, to the point where storage inside the boxes is really, it's redundant, you know, and it's unnecessary. If you have a massive, not even massive, you know, with 2 terabyte hard drives out there now, excuse me, you can get a low-priced home server from Acer or HP, toss in a 2 terabyte drive, and that's going to take you a fair amount of time to fill up. And you can just use that as your primary storage and copy everything to it and play everything from it. And then you don't, and then the storage essentially on the box never gets used.
And I think that's where Homegroup and things like that come in, isn't it? So if you've got Homegroup, you could absolutely, you can just pool all these storage, separate storage areas, and be visible from any machine.
Right. I think Microsoft's definitely is a believer in this vision, which is why now Media Center handles those multiple locations so much better. You know, you can view them all together and seamless, as if you don't know where any of the content is from, or you can actually see which PC you're getting the content from. And I think that's great. I like the seamless method much better. It doesn't matter where, on what server or what PC the content is, as long as you can play it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose then you can almost see a time then maybe where the local storage, you know, you mentioned about, so you have a centralized storage, but maybe there'll be a point in the future where there's enough bandwidth and cloud storage that these small form factor devices could be the only devices that you need, and all your content could be stored offline. Things like Hulu and BBC iPlayer, you don't need to store anything to watch those shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it comes down to your needs, right? If you're strictly using it for the content playback, that essentially could be it. You could just have, you know, 3 or 4 of these set-top of these small form factor boxes around your house. They all just grab from the cloud and, you know, whatever content's available, or from your central server, and you're done. You know, no need for tuners, no need for extra boxes, no need for, you know, big hard drives in each of these boxes.
And in terms of the actual range of devices that are on offer, I was looking at the one that you had on Mission Remote, the Lenovo one. That does look like a pretty a low cost but pretty good solution.
Yeah, it looked pretty solid. I was surprised to see the announcement. Coincidentally, on the same day, I saw the announcement on the Dell that Dell just announced.
Yeah, I'm looking at that as well. Yeah.
it's interesting when you see these big boys, you know, essentially produce home theater PC clients. It tells you something about where the market's going. The Lenovo one is a pretty sexy box. I kind of wish it didn't have Lenovo plastered all over it. And I am definitely concerned about those two fans on the back. But assuming performance is up to par, the specs aren't that bad. This is one case where, you know, they use, I'm sorry, this is another example of using the graphics engine available on these small form factors with a low powered chip. So here they're using a pretty old Pentium dual core processor, and they're pairing it with Intel's X4500, which is also the graphics engine behind their DG45 ID board. And, you know, they're able to design an entire box. I think they stuck something like 640 gigabyte hard drive, you know, and it's got a DVD burner. I would be surprised if they didn't eventually release a Blu-ray version. And, you know, that's all for $500.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty darned affordable.
Yeah, and that makes certainly the price that the second generation extenders came out is pretty close.
Right. Something I do want to mention, because I just forgot to earlier, is that there is a sacrifice that comes with utilizing a small form factor, because I know people are going to hear this and think, well, if a $500 small form factor can do all this, why am I going to spend the money on a dedicated home theater? And there are limitations. Like people do need to know there are limitations to these small form factors. For example, you're stuck if premium audio is your main concern. None of these boxes, as of right now, can support HDMI 1.3 bit streaming. None of them that I'm aware of have analog 8-channel, like professional audio. You know, different options that are available to a main computer, such as, you know, Asus cards, which provide this type of technology. They're just not available yet on board. So just when people are considering these boxes in their main home theaters, they just need to decide what's the most important. Do they want to save the cost and the wattage? Do they want all the bells and whistles? And these are the pros and cons that people need to think about. But I just wanted to get it out there, because I did mean to mention it, that, you know, there is a drawback to using everything on board. You know, the sound quality level you can get from the analog outputs on board are going to be different and lower than what you get from a dedicated pro level sound audio card. So just something to think about.
And I don't know, from looking just at the post, whether things like optical audio output is available on those units.
It looks from the picture that they have a Toslink optical, which is great. But again, if your receiver only has a speed of coaxial, then that's not going to do you very much good.
Yeah. And it comes down to what you said before. You've got to pick the right device for you.
Right. It is interesting, as I'm looking on here right now, it looks like they stuck a television tuner in there, which is pretty unique. Pretty unique for such a small device. And, you know, I'll withhold judgment until I see it in action. But that's pretty cool. If it works well and can do what's needed, that could really be a good standalone client for any bedroom.
Yeah, I think it is. In fact, it's funny. I was I currently got one of the Nivea Zones on review, and I was thinking of trying that with a USB tuner to see whether how well that handles doing the recording itself, and then using PowerPack 3 to move it back to my media center machine.
Right. Yeah, that would work. That's the one. I think that's the way most of these small form factor PCs rely on adding things. It's just with the USB ports. The majority of them include at least 6 USB ports, which gives you plenty of room to expand. And you know, a lot of them have built-in IR receivers for remotes and such. So it makes it where you don't have to have a bunch of USB devices, and you can get it with the core. But for in your example, like if you needed to have TV tuners, there's plenty of USB tuners out there that'll do the job. I probably would prefer a USB tuner over an integrated tuner like the Lenovo, just thinking about the different complexities that could occur, and then just the heat that it generates. TV tuners by nature do tend to get pretty hot.
Yeah, I suppose really I should look at using the HD Home Run that I've got here, because then I could actually use that between two machines.
Right, that's definitely ideal. And then that one, you don't even utilize a USB port on it, so it would just show up on the network and you could pull it that way.
And something else you mentioned there about the IR, that's one thing the Nivea box does have. I've been using it with my the standard MIDI center remote controls, so I don't know that some of these other boxes that have that, so that's something else you'd have to think about, of putting an IR receiver on there.
Right. That's something that a lot of people do overlook sometimes, is they bought this box that, you know, I'm not sure if Lenovo appears to be targeting the home theater crowd, but something like the Dell Mini, maybe they're not maybe it's just a small form factor PC for anybody, so they don't bundle it with a remote or IR. Then people get it home and realize, you know, they have to use their keyboard and mouse to control it.
And I suppose this, it's funny because these kind of come back to the form factor of the Mac Mini, which really hasn't taken off.
Right, you gotta love the irony of it. You know, the initial post I saw, I think on Gizmodo, about the Dell Xeno, that's their new mini device, mentioned it as, I think they mentioned it as a Mac killer or something, and I found that kind of amusing, given that the Mac Mini really has not taken off at all. I mean, I think about the Mac Mini's been around. trying to think, probably like 6 years now, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it's quite a while, yeah.
It's been a while, and it's consistently, you know, there. Like, it hasn't gone away, but it definitely hasn't taken off. And I think Apple could learn a lesson from all these guys like Lenovo and Dell, who are specifically targeting the home theater crowd. I think that's something that Apple really had focused their Apple TV on. But the Apple TV just has so many limitations versus what a full, the Mini can do. So it's interesting to see how it hasn't evolved. You know, it really hasn't changed very much from when it was first announced. And I'm sure a lot of people are strictly using them as desktops, and you know, that's fine. There's a couple people that use them like with a home theater application like Plex, which is out there and has a gorgeous interface. But I think the majority are not, and it's interesting that now, right now, that Dell and Lenovo would release a product of a similar stature, you know, specifically for a home theater PC. So I love it. I think it's great for our market.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see something new coming into this area, which recently is kind of, I felt, has been under threat really by perhaps, you know, from the Xbox, and for the fact that people are watching more video on a laptop and things, and it kind of so that it becomes more of a niche, and it's kind of almost a forgotten market, because people think home theater PCs has been the kind of the 2002 HP machines.
Right, and this has really happened. Every couple of years or so, you know, the cycle restarts, basically, where people think it's dead, people don't want the heat, don't want the price, don't want the hassle, and then something new like this will come out saying, whoa, you know, this tiny little box, you can put it anywhere and it can do all your capabilities, right? I mean, think a year ago, there was no onboard graphics, there was no small form factor PCs that could handle 1080p, so it was never even a consideration, right? I mean, people had to rely on extenders and the Sigma-based chips to be able to output that type of resolution in a small form factor. Now, you know, with the Atom chip being so low powered, low heat generated, and the graphics getting so much better with the Ion and the Intel chips, that it's really getting competitive, and it's a great time.
Yeah, so all we really need to finish off, that I can see anyway, is a web guide type application, so that if you're using these dotted around your home and you just want to browse guide data, then you can do that and not have to go back to the main machine.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that's where, you know, the cloud really is ideal with these mini boxes. So you had mentioned the cloud earlier, and you know, the theory behind the cloud is perfect for these small HTPC clients, right? You could have all the clients directly communicate with the cloud whenever they want, and they share everything. They share the TV that's available to them, they share the guide data that's available to them, and they share everything. That's really the way to go, and that would be a great, great little setup.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities here, and I hope that that when Microsoft are looking at the Windows 8 planning, that they can see these, and that it's still a viable market. It's still a market for media center, but it just needs to evolve to things like this and the cloud.
Right, exactly.
So, well, I'm looking forward to seeing how these devices progress. Like I said, I've got the Zoom, which I've just started to use, and I think I can definitely see how these could be an option and could lure me away from the Xbox 360 as an extender.
Right, especially if gaming, the Xbox 360 is a great device, especially for the price. But even the new chips, they still do generate more noise than is really preferred, and they are pretty power hungry versus what one of these small form factors. I mean, the Dell is so small, I'd be surprised if that thing generates even 30 watts of power. So they bring something to the table that wasn't there before, and you know, it's good competition for the Xbox, and I think it's good all around. You know, I don't think that it's necessarily one or the other. I could totally see a home with a main home theater PC in the living room, an Xbox 360 in the game room, and then a couple of these little clients in each bedroom.
Yeah, definitely.
It all makes for a great ecosystem. I don't think it has to be one or the other. And you know, it's great. You know, there are people that they love TV. They watch a ton of TV. They just never watch TV in bed. They only watch movies in bed, or vice versa. And it, you know, each device allows you to do what's necessary. And I think it's a great model that we have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was great chatting to you tonight again, Mike. So Missing Remote's a place to go to look at the products that we're talking about and all the other stuff as well.
Yep, missingremote.com, one word. We try to bring you the latest and greatest on home theaters in general, including all software, hardware, and we have experts that talk about actual home theater gear as well. So it's not just the PC market, but that is my particular specialty. So it's kind of what I post about the most. But you know, I try to find posts. If anybody has any news or articles that are related, we'd be more than happy to post them there.
Excellent. Well, May, thanks for your time today, Mike. And we'll look forward to seeing you on a future show, but we'll give you a couple of weeks off.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me again, Ian. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks to Mike. You can email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, twitter.com/axdixon. Look out for the videos. Please keep your comments coming. I'll see you around. Thanks for listening. Bye.